The big question, how stable is Afghanistan's financial system?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Right now we're going to ask the big question. We know Afghanistan's democracy is very, very fragile, but what about the banks there? The country's biggest private bank, Kabul Bank, says it could lose more money this year than it has in total deposits. American and Afghan officials say those losses threaten the country's fledgling financial system, a system that's only been in place since 2001. Mark Dummett is the BBC reporter in Afghanistan. He's with us live this morning from Kabul. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, Steve.
So how much money did the bank say it lost?
Well, they're being pretty quiet about all of this because there are serious worries about its financial health. Several reports in the newspapers that it could have lost about $300 million, which is more than it can afford to lose, really. The central bank has moved in a few hours ago to say that it will survive, that it's not going to go bust, to reassure Afghans, you know, the many thousands of people who deposit their savings in this bank, that it's not going to crash, because if it did, as you said, it could have a pretty serious impact on the country's economy.
Where did this quickly, Mark, where did this money go?
Well, there are these allegations. At the moment, they're just newspaper allegations. The government hasn't come out and confirmed any of these, that the bank was involved in corruption and in various property deals in the Gulf. But as I say, that none of those have yet been confirmed by the bank itself or by the government. But, you know, as you know, here in Afghanistan, there are all sorts of concerns about the levels of corruption, and particularly about what happens to the huge profits that are earned by the illegal opium trade. So there is this whole doubt over a lot of businesses here that there is a lot of money splashing around the country and lots of concerns over whether it was honestly earned or not.
And very quickly, Mark, just a few seconds, how healthy is the financial system in Afghanistan? Rate it on a level of 1 to 10.
Well, I'd say it's probably one. I mean, of course, this country's facing an enormous war with the Taliban, and banks such as the Kabul Bank only came into existence in the last decade, really, after the U.S.-led invasion of the country. It's
well,
a very
fragile
situation.
We're going to have to wrap it up there. Mark Dummett from the BBC reporting live from Kabul. Mark, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
All right, let's do the numbers. Markets are higher right now in Europe, 1% to 2%. Wall Street yesterday, a mixed bag as August came to a close. The Nasdaq lost 0.25%. The Dow added about 5 points to close at 10,014. You know, I remember the first time I went to Greece to see my family. I was a smoker and got off of the 12-hour airplane flight and asked at the airport if I could light a cigarette. The man at customs said to me, "This is Greece. You can smoke anywhere." Well, that's about to change. From Athens, Joanna Kakissis reports.
Cafe owners say the Greek economic crisis and a raft of new taxes have hurt their business. Now the anti-smoking crackdown will make things worse. For 25 years, Thomas Delilingas has been running his small cafe in the quiet Athens neighborhood of Galatzi. It's a place where people play pool and talk about the latest soccer game. Everyone drinks coffee and the strong Greek liquor called ouzo. And until yesterday, everyone smoked. Today, Delilingas is glum. He has had to shoo away several customers because they wanted to smoke. And if he were to let them, a new Greek law will fine him hundreds of dollars.
People here have learned to drink their coffee, to drink their ouzo, while having their cigarettes. The cafe owner should be able to decide whether to allow smoking in their area or not. I am trying to run a business here. I can't play police officer with my customers.
Delilingas himself doesn't smoke and can't stand the smell. But fate, he says, made me a cafe owner, and business is business. And right now, Greece needs all the business it can get. In Athens, I'm Joanna Kakissis for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Ally Bank, committed to customer service with the option to reach a human being at any time at 877-247-ALLY by pressing 0. and by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
There are a lot of Europeans who believe sparkling wine should only be called champagne if it's made in France. Today marks the beginning of a new agreement between the European Union and Australia that means Australian winemakers can no longer make champagne. Christopher Worth has more from London.
Australian winemakers have the next year to phase out names such as Burgundy, Port, Sherry, and yes, Champagne from their labels. Instead of champagne, drinkers will buy Australian sparkling wine. The move protects Europe's traditional winemaking regions, such as Champagne, in northeast France. Jose Ramon Fernandez is with the European Wine Companies Committee in Brussels. He represents winemakers and says the agreement is one of the most ambitious to date, and he'd like to see similar action taken in the United States, where a handful of companies continue to use traditional European names.
There is a number of brands and products which are marketed in the U.S. which are using those terms, such as champagne, sherry, port, among others. So one of the goals of this future bilateral agreement with the U.S. should be to try to improve the situation along the lines of what has been achieved already with Australia.
Last year, Europeans bought over $800 million worth of Australian wine. In exchange for corking its use of the name Champagne, Australian wine producers will get easier access to the European market. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
And finally, Australian actor Paul Hogan lives in Los Angeles with his wife and son. But he's been stuck down under for 10 days now since returning to Australia for his mother's funeral. Authorities won't let him leave the country because they say he owes taxes on $34 million in undeclared income. Hogan, you'll remember, starred in the 80s movie franchise Crocodile Dundee.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
Hogan tells a newspaper he doesn't have near the money people think he has, something that could be proven just by the receipts from his third film in the series, Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.